Hey everyone, Cave Dan here for the Faithless Brewing Podcast. This past Monday was a difficult day for the Faithless family. We had to say goodbye to one of our own. Faithless Looting, the best card in Modern, breaker of formats and giver of value, was struck down in the prime of its life, taken from us by a cruel stroke of research and development. I would like to begin this podcast with a moment of silence. Thank you, Faithless Looting, for all that you do. You will be missed. And to all the brewers out there in the Faithless family, I also say thank you for listening. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to episode 18 of Faithless Brewing. I am David Robertson, safely ensconced back in the Midwest after a little trip to Europe. I am joined, as always, by Damon Alexander out in Seattle. Damon, how's life?
Oh, it's good. It's just dealing with the brand new modern world we live in. How was your half marathon, by the way?
Easy work. The weather was like 52 and overcast, so it was just absolutely perfect running weather. And the marathon in Reykjavik, which I highly recommend to everyone, is on their like national cultural celebration day. So every mile of the course is just full of people like playing music and dancing and like giving you candy bars and beers. The guy next to me crushed multiple beers while we were running along. And of course, he finished far ahead of me. So maybe I should have been doing that.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think Iceland is incredibly reachable for anybody, unless you're maybe in Seattle. It's a little bit farther of a flight, but yeah, it's a really spectacular trip that people should take, especially for somebody on the East Coast like Mr. Dan Schriever, who's joining us. He's Caved In Online, and he does manage our Faithless Brewing Twitter feed. Dan, what's new?
Oh, you know, I'm still processing, still reeling a bit from this announcement. It's been a difficult couple of days.
So while I was gone, you guys... The whole modern world as we knew it has switched and flipped upside down.
Everything fell apart when you were gone.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what happened.
Dogs and cats living together. Yeah, so for the people that don't know, the banned and restricted announcement was on Monday.
Yeah, and it's crazy that they didn't ban Hogak. I was so thinking they would.
So we won't get into the standard and vintage implications, but unless you've been living underneath a rock, you know that Hogak has been banned. Faithless Looting was also banned. That was a little bit of a surprise. And Stoneforge Mystic was unbanned, which I found to be incredibly surprising. So I think we can kind of quickly go through Hogak. I don't think this was a surprise to any of us. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, after GP Vegas, where it should have been the top four were all Hogak, but there was like one guy who misplayed, so they made three of the top four. There's just no doubt that was happening.
The hot girl summer is over. Hot gag summer is over. Weather's gotten a little bit colder here. And
Labor Day weekend, man. It's
yeah. I am still going to use the phrase getting gacked every time somebody just gets wrecked in a game. I want that phrase to live on, personally.
Favorite memory of Hogak summer? Go.
Well, making day two with Niv-Mizzet, obviously, at GP Minneapolis.
Okay, fair enough. Good answer. Dave, how about you?
I think there's just a few games where, you know, they had kind of their nut draw beginning, and somehow through a series of draws from your whatever, quote unquote, more fair deck, you finally steal a game and just feel so good. And then you just lose games two and three.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, I won game one. That never happens. You know, that happened like twice. You just felt, you know, like you made all these sweet plays and had the right draws, and then you still lost the match. It was like, that just summed it all up.
That was also going to be my answer. So, yeah, that's Hogak in a nutshell for you.
Yep.
Well, I think this is maybe just a time to reflect on the fact that they've had a really hard time balancing Delve, and they should maybe consider not trying to print cards with Delve on them ever again. I know they have to sell packs. I understand everyone has shares and things that they need to pay for mistresses' homes and whatnot, but maybe just leave the Delve mechanic up on the shelf, and they can explore other space. They printed lots of other interesting cards in the set, so.
Yeah, they could always just have like a rule where they design a fair-looking Delve card, and then take the colorless part and then add one and double it. And then it's probably where it should be.
Or take the colored part that can't be reduced and add one to that.
Yeah, I mean, like, Pogak cost 11 and then 2 colored. That'd be a good EDH card, but it's 7 CMC. Ugh.
So things that you don't have to pay mana for, or in Hogak's case, things that you cannot pay mana for. Yes, not super surprised, but let me pivot on that point to Faithless Looting and why it should not have been banned, because that ban was bullshit. I probably shouldn't say that. That ban was, I'm not cool with that. I am not happy about the Faithless Looting ban. You have to pay mana for Faithless Looting. I'm just going to throw that out there. Way back, right before we started our podcast, I had had a conversation with you, Dave, about what would it take to make Modern fair, quote-unquote fair, and I ended up writing a Reddit post about this just to harvest the karma from pointless ban speculation. And for me, like, the cards that were problematic were the ones that give you effects without paying mana for them. Simeon Spirit Guide, Mox Opal, Manamorphose. There's a broad category of stuff like this that they just let you do things so efficiently because you don't have to pay mana for them. And you, then you get to the cards that people mention, like Ancient Stirring, Faithless Looting. You do pay mana for those. They're just very efficient at what they do. But think back a year ago, like before Guilds of Ravnica, before Arclight Phoenix and Creeping Chill like really powered up Dredge and made the Phoenix phenomenon a thing. Was Faithless Looting the card everyone was clamoring to be banned? No, it wasn't. It was just like another good card. These cards that come out of the graveyard for free, you could just ban Phoenix if you think that's the problem. You could ban Creeping Chill if you think that's the problem. You could ban Hogak or Bridge from Below if you think those are the problems. So you don't pay mana for those. So I don't know. I was not thrilled with the reasoning behind this. And yeah, I mean, I've been on record as saying that Faithless Looting would never be banned, should not have been banned. I am a little pissed.
Well, Dan, to be fair, didn't you go on record saying, what was your most recent wrong prediction on Reddit? That Bridge wouldn't be banned?
Yes, I predicted no changes the previous BNR because I thought there had not been enough time yet.
Yeah, so it's not like your sterling BNR prediction reputation has been tarnished with this one.
You might be correct with what BNR ought to be, but you are not accurate in predicting what BNR is.
Let the record show that my record on this is quite poor. Nevertheless, my opinions are steadfast and resolute.
Yeah, honestly, Dan, I kind of disagree. I mean, like, are you going to ban every single graveyard synergy piece, like Phoenix and Creeping Chill?
Yes.
And Hollow One and Vengevine, like all of the, and Hogak, just et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on. Print a new graveyard card for Standard, you have to ban it for Modern.
Well, like, is Creeping Chill, let's just take that example, that's not Standard playable, right? So that was the card they intentionally printed for Modern. It was a limited card. You guys would have to tell me.
Nobody knows the intention of Creeping Chill.
I believe that when they print cards like that in Standard legal expansions, they are costing them on the assumption that you have to pay mana for the enablers. That's why Phoenix is a 3-2 haste that comes out of the graveyard for free. Compare that to Flamewake Phoenix, 2-2 flying haste. You have to pay a red to get that out of the graveyard. They printed Arclight Phoenix without that pay a red clause because they're like, oh, in Standard, yeah, you gotta spend 1 or 2 mana for these sort of iffy cantrips like Tormenting Voice, Radical Idea, or whatever. So yeah, fine, get the card out of the graver for free. If they were printing it for Modern, they should have just tacked on a red mana to it. But no, I'm not saying you have to ban those cards. I'm saying if you think that Phoenix is the problem or Dredge is the problem, then yes, go after the card, like go after Grave Troll, like they did. Like the card that pushed it over the edge. This is just one of my complaints. I have severals. I understand that not everyone feels this way about that more surgical whack-a-mole approach to like find the best payoff and leave the enablers alone.
Well, it's sort of interesting. The first BNR, they tried to do it as surgically as possible, right? They banned a card and it turned out to not be enough. And then they like blundered as far as they could in the other direction. Not only did they ban Hogak, which at this point was mandated, and I know they didn't want to do it because there's product on the shelf for them to sell. They also decided to ban Faithless Looting, which would create a whole new Modern metagame. And then, in what in the engineering world like to call a confounding factor, they decided to unban Stoneforge Mystic at the same time. I had been a sort of longtime proponent of unbanning Stoneforge Mystic. I thought it would be interesting, specifically so it could compete against Faithless Looting decks. For them to ban Looting while they unban Mystic is a really interesting choice. And the way that they describe their decision-making process is totally incoherent. to the point that I think we really shouldn't think about their logic. It's unclear that they even understand what they're talking about in a way that's a little borderline alarming about how they describe it. If they really wanted Stoneforge Mystic to challenge Graveyard decks, why didn't they unban it in the middle of Hogak Summer with the first BNR announcement? Their point is literally incoherent.
Do you want to just talk us through their reasoning here then?
I think they make a reasonable point, which is that the Graveyard has been an important part of Modern for like a year, like you said, Dan. And you have seen people main deck Surgical Extraction, specifically Blue-White, I think, has been main decking one or two for at least a year. But then the description for why they're adding Stoneforge Mystic now when they could have added it when Graveyard decks were more powerful, that doesn't make any sense. Banning Faithless Looting already discourages people from using the Graveyard. You don't need another card to encourage people to play fair.
Well, I think that part of what they're saying, like, this makes sense to me, is that if they're going to basically shake up the metagame with the bans, this is a reasonable time to introduce the cards that are on the banned list that perhaps shouldn't have been there. Stoneforge Mystic was, am I correct, was never legal in Modern. It started off on the Modern ban list.
That's correct.
As a result, like, nobody really knows how it will work in this format, especially now that the format has received years and years of cards that help fight it.
Why would you do this now? Like, this sentence in the BNR announcement says, quoting here, "Knowing that these changes will already shake up the metagame, we consider this a good time to review cards currently on the ban list." Like, why? Why is this a good time? Like, this seems like the worst time to do that. Like, you have an unknown metagame. You should use unbans to shake up a stale metagame or a metagame that's, like, settled.
Yeah, but Modern hasn't really been stale for a long time. It hasn't settled in a long time either.
I know. That in itself is a problem. I don't like where this is headed. Modern has become like a rotating format and a very, very expensive one, and it's not a good trend.
That's certainly true. Modern is actually, it should be cheaper than other formats, but somehow it's like the most expensive, more than Legacy even, because you have to buy new cards all the time.
I mean, game design is a lot more art than science. I am a scientist, and when people propose confounding factors to design, that is a really good way to get fired. You know, if you had an employee at an actual engineering firm that kept doing things like this, you would certainly kill them and then eat them to gain their strength.
God.
What?
If they're trying to sell cards, which they are, then that's fine. Just say that. Like, we dramatically decreased attendance in multiple Modern events and we're trying to gin up excitement. That's totally reasonable. They are a company that has to make money, and I think everyone can get behind that. This justification makes no sense and doesn't explain why they didn't unban Stoneforge Mystic in a bunch of other different times when they banned or unbanned cards.
So on that theory then of like the business side of things, I think that if they had banned Hogak and then also sort of surprise banned Looting, which they did, and said nothing about Stoneforge, just left it alone, that people would be kind of mad. There would be a segment of people would be like, oh, this is a brave new world. The format's really opening up because look at all these Faithless Looting decks that, you know, they were format predators and they were putting a lot of pressure on people trying to play fair. But then people who played those decks, their decks are just sort of gone. There is no replacement for Faithless Looting. I know some people on the internet will claim there is, but let's be real. There is nothing even remotely close to this card. All dedicated graveyard decks are taking like massive, massive shift down in power, or they're knocked out completely. That's the kind of change that they've been saying for years, that they don't want to do that kind of thing. Like, we just want to take out one deck at a time. If there's a problem deck, we take out the card that makes that thing a deck. We take out Splinter Twin, and you can still play Kiki if you really want to. Or Ironworks is a problem card, so we'll just kill that deck specifically and leave Opal and Stirrings alone. Killing Faithless, what if, like, that was your deck? That was, like, a $1,000 deck. All the Faithless Legion decks were, and they're all gone now. They're just dead. If you invested in something like a little more stable, like a Blue, White, or a Jund, like, you still have $500 to $700 worth of cards you now need to buy between the Stoneforge unbanning and Horizons. It's a little upsetting to me.
Yeah, I mean, Modern Horizons, I think, is honestly the bigger problem financially. It like basically made a lot of decks just cost a lot more money. And that was one of the advantages of Modern, is that it's cheaper than Standard in some sense. But it feels like now, honestly, Standard is cheaper than Modern, even with the rotation.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. The idea of Modern originally was Standard can be expensive to keep up with, but here's a way to keep using your cards, especially, you know, the powerful cards or cards that you fall in love with playing, you know, the play patterns you like or whatever. And obviously some synergies get created as we build this huge format over multiple sets that didn't exist ever in Standard. And now it's not the case because they have a bunch of cards specifically designed to be, you know, slightly undercosted or slightly overpowered so that they are at sort of a high level modern level, and they can only be acquired through specifically buying or drafting Modern Horizons.
Yeah, so just to round out my conspiracy theory then, I think that the unbanning of Stoneforge was meant to distract us and give us something like shiny and new to focus on. And I would not be surprised if we are soon informed that we'll have an opportunity to like buy Stoneforge in packs in an upcoming product of some kind.
Oh, well, yeah, that's a stone cold lock of the year.
If I want to like believe in the good that they are not just trying to kill people's graveyard decks in Modern, then I would hope that one of the future expansions would have like a watered down looting of some kind. And by that, I mean, it has to cost one mana and like do something vaguely similar to looting.
Careful study?
Yeah, could it just be looting without the flashback?
Right, something in that vein, or whatever they decide is the appropriate power level. The fact that there is no replacement for that, it's not like Lightning Bolt is banned, you can play Burst Lightning now. Like, there's just like, there's nothing even close to Faithless Looting. And don't say Insolent DNA, because that card is a joke. I would like to believe that they will then use this opportunity to like print something so that you can still, if you squint, play your graveyard deck, but I just don't know.
Well, I mean, isn't Cathartic Reunion, like, I mean, the problem is that if you have it at one mana, Faithless Looting was always, it hits its peak when it, the one mana mode, the flashback helps the floor of it. And the graveyard decks being terrifying was from the power ceiling, not the floor.
I'm saying that like any two mana card is just not in the same class. You cannot be like, oh, the fixed version of looting costs two. Like maybe it does, but that's just not going to keep up in Modern.
Well, Modern is a slower format now.
I mean, and it is interesting, you know, I think you said it exactly right, Dan. The average power level of a bunch of decks is decreased, and Stoneforge Mystic is a generically very powerful card, right? It's always a 2-mana 1/2 that draws a card, and if it lives, it cheats into play a 4/4 lifelink vigilant creature that has some recursion over the course of a long game. So you have Stoneforge increasing the power level of any deck that can play it, which are decks with white mana that want to play a game where the 4/4 creature matters. And you dramatically decrease the power of a bunch of quote-unquote unfair decks that would actually be interesting. I think there'd be a little bit more interesting in terms of deck building tension if Stoneforge Mystic had to also be in a format where it was fighting these decks that were fast. And now we're saying, all right, we're slowing the whole format down, and then we're adding a card that's maybe going to push out a bunch of the other quote-unquote fair cards we were hoping to play because it's so much more powerful as a base level.
On the other hand, I mean, like, we haven't had a chance to really see a ton of, for example, like the new version of Infect ever since they printed Scale Up, or even maybe the versions featuring like Teferi Time Raveler. And then there's like the new, you know, Neoform combo is a deck. And then there's just a lot of other like Devoted Druid combo featuring Giver of Runes. There's a lot of decks that are like sneakily were really good, but outshadowed by Hogak and maybe Phoenix. And so Modern, with those decks around, is going to be an interesting place to see how the meta kind of settles around the possible ways to go.
Yeah, that would have been so much more interesting if Stoneforge were not part of the equation, I think. How many times have we talked about in this cast, like, oh, that we have all these cards or these brews that feel like they're knocking on the door of being something good, but they're clearly just getting washed out by these overwhelming graveyard strategies. So, like, the no Hogak, no looting format would be so interesting. For the listeners out there, we usually record on Tuesday nights, and when this announcement came out on Monday, I was thinking, oh gosh, like, we need to record immediately, this is crazy. The scheduling didn't work out that way, we're actually recording on a Wednesday, and I've had 2 days of playing leagues against Stoneforge, and I'm already over it, I'm sick of this card, and it's been 2 days. By the way, that's also the card we're focusing on in the rest of this episode, but geez, like, I'm a little bit on edge about the timing of this unbanning. Like, I'm not too pleased with it. I don't know if that's coming across.
I mean, to be fair, you were playing, I think, one of our weaker lists in the Elementals decks. And also, I mean, like, remember when Narset and Teferi and Karn GC came out, and then every time you go online, you're playing against one of those three cards, and it was super annoying? And they're still around, and they're still super annoying, but they're not, like, as common, at least.
Yeah, it does remain to be seen, you know, right after Jason, Bloodbraid Elf were unbanned, they were in most decks that I played for a while, and then we sort of realized that Bloodbraid Elf was borderline unplayable, and Jace was just okay. I think Blue-White maybe settled on two of them. I don't know if any list ever played four. Yeah, so we'll see. Is Stoneforge Mystic, you know, going to be that good? Right now, people at least want to find out. I'm not sure it's that broken on power level. I do think it's a very powerful card. I think the one thing is a two-mana tutor leads to very repeatable gameplay, which is a little alarming in a format that is allegedly as deep as Modern. So that's the one thing is any deck that's playing Stoneforge, and it's a very easy package to put in. It's just six cards, basically. You're going to see a very similar series of turns after turn two.
Yeah, I mean, I actually don't really buy the repetition aspect in the sense that if you play four Tarmogoyfs, you know, you have repetitive every turn two you play a Tarmogoyf, you know, every other game. And Stoneforge Mystic is like, most of the time you just go for Batterskull. Sometimes it's one of the swords.
It's very similar to Karn the Great Creator. It's Stoneforge, but like what we care about is the cards that it's fetching, which tends to be like a very small selection of artifacts.
I mean, there's a lot of swords to pick from. One of the swords even blows up other swords if you do combat damage to a player, so.
Yeah, and the other swords are actually good.
Yeah, exactly. Not all of them. The blue-green one isn't.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, certainly I wouldn't want to register a Modern League with a deck that kind of folds to a Batterskull or a Sword of Fire and Ice right now.
Yeah, I think it just changes the question that the format is asking. For a while, it was saying, can you beat Hogak? And the answer for every deck was no. Before that, it was asking a little bit more varied question. And now the test really is, I mean, you're going to see turn two Stoneforge possibly fetching a Batterskull in a bunch of different shells. And you have to have a plan for that, even if maybe that plan is your own Stoneforge Mystic.
So big picture then, what do we think the format's going to look like? What are the big gainers, big losers here?
So hard to tell, but I think Tron is going to be one of the big winners.
Are you thinking mono green Tron, Damon? Or are you thinking maybe even like a mono blue Tron could come back?
I just don't know. Like mono blue Tron is a mystery to me. Who knows? But mono green Tron, at least, like one thing you can do against Stoneforge is just kind of go over the top. Like in Legacy, for example, there's 12 posts, and when you're playing like a Batterskull and they have like a Reality Smash, it's just bigger than the Batterskull. And then you go even a step bigger with like Ulamog, and you look at your Germ token, and it just feels sad. And Tron can happily do that.
I buy that reasoning.
The one card that makes me a little nervous about Stoneforge's power level is actually Force of Negation. I could see Stoneforge with the ability to sort of counter the big plays from a deck like Tron, which would normally go over the top, with Force possibly being a problem. I haven't seen enough of the games yet to have a sense of does Stoneforge feel overpowered or not. But if it was, that would be the kind of shell that I think would be the most concerning.
So another big winner, I think, is any deck that is looking to play cards like Abrupt Decay, Assassin's Trophy, Dreadbore, anything that like spends mana to remove a permanent from the battlefield. Before, like the pressure of the graveyard decks was those cards are just going to be stone dead if you get paired up against a graveyard deck because there's all these recursive threats and you just can't win a game that way. Trying to like swat down these phoenixes or bloodghast or whatever the hell. Those decks were always rolling the dice, like you were praying that they're playing regular creatures, but you know there's a good chance they aren't. Now I think you're going to see like most of the metagame is going to be creatures that die and stay dead when you lightning bolt them. So it's a great time to be playing Jund or Niv-Mizzet, for example. Anything that's just like looking to destroy things on the battlefield. They won't come back. It's going to be a change in Modern. Hasn't been like that in a long time.
Instead of talking about the decks are going to do well, I think the other thing we can talk about is decks are going to struggle. I think that Humans is a really big loser here. It's a deck that focuses on creatures in play. It is not easy for that deck as it's currently constructed to play Stoneforge Mystic and activate it. I don't know how many white sources they actually play.
Oh, it's not too many. It's the Horizon Canopies, maybe a Plains.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple other cards, but not many.
Yeah, and Batterskull is a card that is quite good against Humans' base strategy, and they can't interact with Mystic typically. They don't play removal, so that's a deck I think we're going to see a large reduction in.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Or they could just drop the Kitesail Freebooter and play like a Jeskai Humans. They could easily adopt the Stoneforge Mystic if they wanted to.
I mean, I think Noble Hierarch is like one of the best cards in the deck, so I guess I don't agree necessarily that dropping green is totally free, but I'm not a Humans expert, so if that's not the case, then I mean, there's a lot of very, very good Humans players, and I'm sure they'll be experimenting with various shells, but I don't think a human shell that cannot play Stoneforge Mystic itself can survive.
On the subject of Hierarch, we had been talking about for the past few weeks that there's a massive format pressure against one toughness creatures between Renin 6 and these Lava Dart decks being all over the place. I don't know if that's still going to be true. Like, Lava Dart decks all seem to have taken a giant hit. But Renin 6 is still out there doing his thing, possibly better than ever. So if you can't play one toughness creatures, and if you also can't play creatures that are smaller than Battleskull, like, it's tough to be a deck like humans, like you're saying, that is trying to deploy a few creatures to the battlefield and attack with them.
Yeah, people say spirits can adapt Stoneforge. That's interesting, because that deck also, in a sense, gets worse against Batterskull because it's harder to race against it. But if it can play Stormforge, also might get net better.
It's also interesting because Spirits at least has creatures that fly. So Batterskull is not a good blocker against them, typically.
No, but it still races pretty well.
Sure, that is true.
So what are you most excited to brew, then, in this brave new Modern?
I mean, I haven't been out there in the trenches playing Stoneblade in Modern yet, and I played the deck a lot in Legacy, and so I feel like I should at least give it a whirl at some point. But Niv-Mizzet and also the Cures Dragons deck from a while back seems like it might be pretty decent. It doesn't care too much about a Batterskull, you know, with a Glorybringer, just punk it, go over the top with Hasty Flyers.
I like the sound of that.
And that deck was a blast to play.
Yeah, I'd love to see some dragons get in there.
And from what I've seen right now, people are getting super greedy with their mana bases. Everyone's aware that Tron is kind of going to have a renaissance. So even like just straight blue-white lists for Stoneforge are playing, you know, five or six colorless lands that can attack Tron's mana base. So it's not inconceivable to steal some games with Blood Moon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think probably what I would be most excited about is just trying to go over the top of everything. And I've been thinking in terms of, you know, Niv-Mizzet just going over the top of the mid-range decks, but what you're saying, Damon, about dragons actually sounds good too, like literally fly over the top.
Niv-Mizzet's a dragon that flies over the top.
That's true, he is. I mean, he also is bigger than a Germ token. It kind of sucks if they put a sword on it, because then you can never block.
Yeah, it turns out any sword is good against Niv.
Yeah.
Come one, come all.
Sword of Niv and Mizzet. But yeah, maybe sometime soon we can just revisit some of our brews that we liked and see how they stack up against the new Modern format.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, I think right now people are in that phase where there's this new toy, you know, it's Christmas morning, you want to open it and play with it and see what it can do. And I think in a week or two, the format will kind of have settled on some of the quote-unquote best builds for a lot of these. I think the Urza lists with the kind of combo built in around Thopter Foundry, that deck can exist as it is, and it was very powerful, or it can incorporate Stoneforge Mystic into its build, so it sort of has a proactive plan B when plan A falls apart. I think that deck is probably what I would consider the safest to predict to be in Tier 1 going forward.
Urza Sword might actually be completely broken. I mean, that deck had a 60% win rate at the GPs during Hogak Summer, like a better win rate than Hogak in some of the tournaments, I think. And the deck may actually be just nuts and like become the new format oppressor.
I do think the one thing that might hold it back, and this is a point that I think you've made very well in previous podcasts, Damon, is sort of that leaky bucket theory of sideboards is now you don't need to have any graveyard hate main, I would say, and you can reduce your graveyard hate significantly in your sideboard. And that means that we can start to play with all these really powerful anti-artifact toys that they've printed. They have the Green Force, the Oof, Stony Silence can make a comeback, Ancient Grudge that you've mentioned. So there's a lot of ways to combat these artifact heavy decks. So that might be a way that deck starts to be, you know, a little bit more in the crosshairs for what people are really designing their sideboard for principally.
That's certainly true. If you can squeeze in a couple Shatterstorms in your sideboard instead of Ley Lines, that'll go a long way. The deck can come prepared with Thoughtseizes out of the sideboard and Assassin's Trophies. They can go off in one turn if they get the window.
Oh yeah, I expect this deck to, you know, there's an SCG tournament in Dallas Fort Worth this weekend. I'm expecting at least one Urza. I don't know if it'll have Stoneforge or if it'll have the Goblin Engineer. Smarter people than me will make that determination, but I expect at least one of them to be in the top eight, if not more.
Yeah, the deck now, even if you shut it off with Oof, they can still kill you with a Batterskull, apparently.
Yeah.
Oh no.
It's a crazy world.
No.
So I think that's kind of our summary of the Banner Restricted take. Dan hates it. I dislike it, but I mean, I think it's just of a piece with the decision-making process at WotC. Damon is the only one who still believes in life after love.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's like a decent chance SFM gets banned in like 3 months.
Yeah, I honestly think that's not crazy. I think it would be a slight favor to get banned, except for the fact that WotC would have to admit they made a mistake, which they really dislike doing.
No, it's not even a mistake. It's not a mistake. They're trying it. They even mentioned in the thing, like, while we think it's unlikely, there is a scenario where SFM could come to suppress this type of gameplay, in which case we would re-examine its legality. Like, I'm happy they're trying it, to be honest. There is, like, the whole, yeah, the fact that the conspiracy angle you guys are talking about, but I think it is a good card to try, and if it sucks, they can just ban it again, and people are just going to be out $400.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how we should be treating consumers of our product. Is Stoneforge Mystic really that expensive all of a sudden?
Oh, it's like 70 or 80 bucks now, yeah. It's like sold out a lot of the stores. I'm not even sure, to be honest.
Really? Well,
it's double whatever it was. And if it has a breakout weekend, which preliminary signs just from me browsing Twitter suggest that it is going to have a breakout weekend and it's going to be all over the deck dumps on Friday, then yes, it's going to keep going up.
Yeah, I mean, it's sold out on both Star City Games and Card Kingdom. Although Star City Games has the promo foil for 60 bucks.
Yeah, it is $70 on MTG Goldfish. I didn't realize it was so expensive even before the unbanning.
Yeah, it spikes up before every BNR because people think it might get unbanned.
And this time they finally got paid off.
Yeah, absolutely. Fortunately, I just love the card because of Legacy, and so I actually have like 7 copies of it.
Nice. So you might retire from your lucrative career podcasting. You can just relax.
But I can't sell my Stoneforges.
They brought you so much joy.
Hold them as I fall asleep, now knowing that they're worth almost $1,000 collectively.
Yeah.
My God. Okay, well, we're going to have a lot more to say about Stoneforge after the break, because that is the car we are going to be discussing some brews for. If you like Stoneforge, Damon, you're in for a treat this week.
Oh, wow. Can't wait.
But before we get to that, we have some lists from last week to follow up on, so we'll be right back with that in a minute.
All right, and we are back. Last week, we discussed some brews around various elemental shells, and we did sort of caution that against the Hogak metagame that was going to be present for the first few days, we were just more interested in learning. And then, of course, the types of decks that we might play against changed after the ban and restricted announcement. So the first one we played was sort of a Bant Vesperlark shell. It had a combo finish in there. Damon, I think you ran that one through a league. What were your impressions?
Yeah, so the very first game I played with it, I ran up against the Urza Sword deck, and my draw was like turn 1 Noble Hierarch, turn 2 Risen Reef, turn 3 Image Copy Risen Reef, Image Copy Risen Reef. And then they, like, I forget what happened. Oh, they cast Grafdigger's Cage, and so I couldn't combo off with the Vesperlark Phantasmal Image Altar of Dementia loop. And just to remind the listeners what that is if you have a Vesperlark Phantasmal Image and Altar of Dementia in play at the same time, with the image copying Vesperlark, you sack the image to the altar, mill your opponent for 2, and then the trigger will immediately let you return itself to play, where you can recopy the Vesperlark. Because Vesperlark has this exit the battlefield trigger that says return a creature with power 1 or less. Phantasmal Image in the graveyard has 0 power. And so you get this looper, you can just sack the image over and over and over again, and then mill your opponent out. And so, in game 1, my opponent was so cheeky to play a Grafdigger's Cage that I couldn't do this. And so I had to resort to using the 4 Risen Reefs I had in play by that time to play Voice of Resurgence, and then copy Voice of Resurgence, and then every single time you play these things, you wind up drawing 4 cards. And so by turn 5, I had both drawn my entire deck and amassed enough power from Voice of Resurgence and its tokens to mill my opponent out. We took a screenshot on turn 5 with both of us having 0 cards in our library and my opponent going to their draw step. It's certainly a fun way to start off a league. The rest of the league did not quite go so well. I finished 2-3 overall. One of the games was to Hogak, so that will put a little asterisk there. Like, I just got smoked by Eldrazian Taxes. They just killed all my dudes. And then Infect was just too fast for me. I fell into the bracket where I was playing against Green-Black Relentless Wraths with, what's that card that gives every spell you have Ripple 4 or whatever?
Thrumming Stone?
Yeah, Thrumming Stone.
You were in the Thrumming Stone bracket? Oh, you gotta tell me, how did the deck perform in the Thrumming Stone bracket?
Well, it performed pretty well. I had my sideboard Lavinia, and so counter tech to the Thrumming Stone, we were prepared. They had this interesting card, though, where I forget what it is, but it like lets you return all copies of a creature from your graveyard to the battlefield. And so it's a good thing I didn't, like, mill them halfway.
Bloodbond March, that's the one you were saying.
Yes,
right?
Bloodbond March.
I only knew that because you told me you played against this card, and I had to look it up.
Yeah, I don't really feel bad forgetting what that card is. But yeah, the deck just, it actually, the problem is that it's really playing this A plus B plus C combo with the Vesper Lark, the Image, and the Altar. And it's also like a graveyard combo and a creature combo. So basically any axis of interacting with anything in the game of Magic will mess you up in your three-card combo. And then the deck's like plan B. The maximal power of creatures in the deck is 2. Voice of Resurgence, in theory, can get you a much larger creature, but it takes some work. Risen Reef is actually just like a sweet card and draws you tons of cards, but it can only do so much. And then Master of Waves was awful, and I hated it every time I drew it. Dan, how was the deck for you?
I kind of liked it, actually. So you had advised me to swap a couple of cards. You said that the Aether Vials were not really reliable, and that those should just be more mana dorks, so I added the Birds of Paradise, like you suggested. And we initially had some Hedron Crabs in the main deck, which I thought were going to serve to dig for stuff, like mill yourself and then get them back with the Vesper Lark or Renegade Rally or whatever. And you said those were not happening either. So you advised Teferi Time Reveler. I made those changes and you know, threw in a couple other interesting fun ofs. Like I put Eternal Witness in. I realized that Felidar Guardian also combos with Vesper Lark if you have a Altar in play. And since we are a Neoform deck, we didn't have many 4-drops besides Master of Waves, so I just cut the Master and put a Felidar in there instead, so that it, in the off chance that I had a 3-drop and a Vesper Lark, I could Neoform that other 3-drop to find the Felidar, execute the combo that way. That came up like once or twice, but the Felidar was otherwise not very good. So I think I went 3-2 in the first league that I played with it, and this was on Monday, so the BNR had already taken effect. And what I found was that, yeah, I lost right away to Infect and Affinity because the elementals just didn't block very well against the attackers that those decks had. I was like really expecting to have like a fine sort of fair creature matchup because we have cards like Voice of Resurgence and Risen Reef to like grind or whatever, Vesper Lark to grind, but those decks were really just trying to kill me with evasion, and I did not have much room in the deck for removal. Was able to rally and defeat Goblins and then 2 different Stoneblade variants, mostly on the power of Risen Reef. It became clear in those Stoneblade matchups, I think it was against a Jeskai version and an Abzan version, that they were going to try to remove my permanence and like break up the combo, and I was like really excited that the deck had the ability to sort of settle in for a longer value game. So those were actually pretty encouraging wins. Yeah, I was pretty happy with it, actually. All the changes you suggested, Damon, especially the Teferi, was very nice, just as a general card to protect the combo and to fight back against the germ tokens or whatever it was. I did play one more league with the deck. I decided to try a Red Splash just on the hunch that having a singleton Thunderkin Awakener and maybe some Flamekin Harbingers to find my important elementals more often would be worth it. And that league was disastrously bad. That version of the deck was so awful that I don't really want to say any more about it. It turns out that when you're not playing the tribal mana base, when you're trying to cast things like Neoform, so you're actually using shocks and fetches, yeah, you don't want to be a 4-color deck splashing for Flamekin Harbinger. That was a terrible idea, and I regret proposing it. But the Bant version I kind of liked.
You should copy the Niv mana base, Dan.
I mean, Arkham's Astrolabe is actually another broken card. It's maybe not as egregious as Urza, but it is equally broken in its own way.
Yeah. The card might get banned in Pauper, actually, I have the feeling, which will prove its brokenness, at least in some format.
But yes, I'm going to tentatively endorse the Bant version. I know what you're saying about A plus B plus C combo, and I thought that was an interesting point to sort of think about, because when you said that, I was like, well, that's Devoted Druid combo. That's a 3-part combo. So, like, what's the difference? And then you were like, oh, well, this one's much more conditional. It costs a lot more mana, I guess.
It goes to the graveyard. The C part is not actually like half of your deck like it is in Devoted Druid.
Yeah, there's not a ton of copies of the different parts of the combo. And while I did frequently cast the Tribute Mage to find Altar, it did not feel good to do so. Felt kind of stupid doing it.
Yeah.
It worked. But yeah, I was ashamed of myself for that.
And the reason why I didn't like the Aether Vials was because even though they had a really good sort of best case scenario, the problem is that when you draw all these cards off Risen Reef, like, it would happen where my hand would wind up being like 3 altars and 2 ether vials, and I would just get stuck. Ether vial is just kind of bad at that point in the game.
Yeah, you do still need to like get your 3 drops on the board quickly. It's not just a matter of, oh, once I take the vial up to 3, I'm going to start going off. That's cool, but the game is decided by other things. So, yeah. The other build that we got to play a little bit with was the red-black Thunder Forger deck that we talked about last week that is kind of like a Shaman tribal deck with an elemental package. The idea here was that there was this Shaman's tribal deck from, what was it, Dave, like a year ago?
Yeah, I think so.
That had somehow or other put up some 5-0s, mainly on the back of Rage Forger, which is an elemental shaman that buffs your other shamans. So I was interested in seeing if adding Thunderkin Awakener to that deck with something like Seasoned Pyromancer, which is another shaman, and Lightning Scale Elemental, which is a great card to pair with the Thunderkin Awakener, could really sort of power up the deck to give it a little bit more of a respectable game. I took this deck through a league, and this was again on Monday, so I was not able to use the card Faithless Looting, which had been in all of the Thunderkin Awakener shells.
Oh no.
Yeah, oh no. It was not immediately obvious to me how much of a difference that would make. Turns out it makes a huge difference, and my god, it was sad. So Thunderkin Awakener, 1/2 haste for 2. That's kind of exciting, because like, you know, you could do something explosive on turn 2, like you play it and immediately return a Lightning Scale Elemental. Except that without Faithless Looting, you just can't do that. The only time I did that was a game where they like mulliganed to 5 and played a Tron land, and I realized that I had a window to just Thought Seize myself for a Skelemental and attack with a Thunderkin on turn 2, which I did, and it was sweet, and it won the game, but I don't know. Without Faithless Looting, Thunderkin Awakener is just massively defanged as a card.
If only there was a Neonate that was, you know, maybe not quite into society's norms and a little bit insolent, he'd say, yo, perfectly! But that card is bad. It's true.
I mean, the thought crossed my mind. What if I had a Neonate? So yeah, the best that I could do without Faithless Looting was like turn 2, Rick Smoddy Reveler, discard a Skelemental, and then turn 3, I can maybe play a Thunderkin. But that's not any different from just playing the Skelemental on turn 3. So that was kind of a letdown. The deck was still fine. I think I went 3-2 my first time around, and the deck had a good amount of grind. The Seasoned Pyromancers went a long way towards that, and Lightning Skelemental is still pretty good, actually, which I think people who have been playing the Skelemental decks, that's probably not a surprise to anyone who has played the card. Pleasant surprise for me. This is my first time taking a Skelemental deck out into the wild. But the idea of buffing the Shaman package thanks to Thunderkin Awakener didn't really pan out. I actually found myself usually siding out Thunderkins and siding out Flamekin Harbingers because they just weren't really good draws. Part of the other reason that they were not so good was that, unfortunately, this is the exact kind of deck that will never, ever defeat a Batterskull. And I played against a lot of Stoneforge decks. So I played against 2 in my first league. I tried a second league and played against it 2 more times. I think since Monday, so this is Wednesday right now, as I'm saying this, I've played probably 40% of my matches, 37% of my matches have been against Stoneforge decks. This particular brand of elemental deck is exactly the kind of deck we talked about that cannot defeat a Stoneforge mistake. It was really sad. I even had Coal Against Commands because I'd heard that that was good counterplay. It really isn't. That is very difficult to execute. So I'm not really sure if that's even like a realistic option now. The problem is that once they've got the Stoneforge, they don't have to put the Batterskull in until they're ready to, but you have to leave your mana up all the time or like risk an attack into the Batterskull, and if they have a Force of Negation, the game is over. Or if they don't have a Force of Negation, they just don't put the Batterskull in until they're ready, and once they're on 5, you're just never going to kill the Batterskull. So
you can always kill the Stoneforge Mystic and make them discard. Like, you don't have to get the artifact with the K command.
This deck had nothing that could get through a lifelinking 4/4.
Yeah, that's true.
All of my creatures were 2/2s. You know, I had Burning Tree Emissary in the deck, and Rick's Money Reveler, Seasoned Pyromancer. It was a lot of bears. So, unfortunately, I don't think that the Thunderkin Awakener decks are going to be a large part of the meta going forward. The rest of the Shaman shell was fine-ish. There are changes I would make. I would actually try to go back to something closer to the Jund build that had cards like Elvish Visionary. found that my curve was a little bit too high on 3, and I just need a little more velocity and more smoothing. I was trying ether vials again, and they just weren't quite working out, so those should just become lands. I'll post a recommended updated list for it, but I'm not super optimistic for this red-black shell at the moment.
Yeah, it does seem a little bit weak without faithless looting.
And I just foiled out the deck, too. I heard this is a non-rotating format.
I know, I have Mardu, Pyromancer, Dredge, and Is It Phoenix all in the mail right now. So disappointing.
Yeah. I don't have anything more to add about elementals. I mean, the deck is still out there. We talked about the other shells that have been popping up in the 5-0 leagues, and they're still out there. There was another sort of 5-color miscellaneous elemental deck in the deck dumps on Tuesday. I think that's going to continue to be the case. Like, if you get the right matchups, the specific elementals, mainly the Reef, has the tools to get you through a lot of modern matchups, but not all.
I would say, and again, I didn't play any of these leagues, if they aren't going to be playing all these, you know, red ways to do one damage, then maybe the 2-mana 1/1 that taps for 2 mana is a lot more attractive. You know, decks like Tron don't kill creatures easily, and white-blue decks, which is a common shell that Stoneforge finds it in, only really plays Path as far as early interaction. That card has a high ceiling, low floor, so maybe you start to get paid off a little bit more on that, and you can play, you know, 5-mana elementals, or, do you know what I mean? Like, you can go almost a bigger mana shell. You could play the Evoke guy that draws 2. Moldrifter.
Moldrifter? How do you forget the name of Moldrifter? What a classic Magic card.
I don't know. I play that card all the time.
The Smokebreeder has been showing up as like a 2-of in some of these lists. I don't really see it, how that card could be plausible.
Because Moldrifter is sweet. That's how.
If it's a creature that's important, the opponent should be able to kill a 2-mana creature. Doesn't matter what card they use. It doesn't have to be a Lava Dart. If they need to kill it, they should be able to kill it.
Well, pathing a mana dude is always kind of a bad play.
Exactly.
All right.
Anyway, just a thought. I mean, I have not played any of these games, so.
Yeah, I mean, the elementals, they're decent blockers. They do have, like, sword problems in their own way. They have a hard time blocking against Feast and Famine or against Fire and Ice. So you will get got by the Stoneforge package. Yeah, I was happier when I had the option to combo them out with the altar in the Bant build.
Oh, yeah. The Bant build felt... It did feel like a reasonable modern deck. It's not like an embarrassing modern deck. Even if it didn't quite feel where we wanted it to be power level-wise, it still might be that there's just some tweaks to make to put it up a good level.
Yeah, like if you get a 2-mana 1/2 that could like tutor up like an artifact, you could equip some of your elementals, then I think the deck starts to get a lot more powerful.
Surely that must take a lot of deck-building slots.
Yes.
To guarantee that kind of consistency.
Yeah.
So I think we'll just leave that there. There's some ideas maybe worth revisiting in the future. And when we return, we're going to start to discuss possible builds that can use the brand new toy in Modern, the Stoneforge Mystic herself. All right, we are back. So the card that we're going to try to play around with this week is none other than Stoneforge Mystic. It's the brightest star in the Modern universe at the moment. For people who missed that era of Standard, they might only know this card as a sort of legacy standout. And Damon, you have played quite a bit, as my understanding, of Stoneforge Mystic and Legacy in various shells. Is that correct?
Yeah. My two main Legacy decks are Blue-White Stoneblade, featuring 4 Stoneforge Mystic as part of the name of the deck, even. And then Legacy Maverick plays usually 2 Stoneforge Mystics. And so that's how I came to own 6 copies of that card. And so basically, Blue-White Stoneblade is an interesting counterpoint to the kind of pure blue-white control deck in Legacy called Miracles. It's much more of a tempo, not quite tempo deck, but it features a few more kind of tap-out worthy threats. And so the creature package there starts with 4 Stoneforge Mystic and then 3 Snapcaster Mage along with 3 True Name Nemesis. If you think of how that would work in Modern, it doesn't quite convert that cleanly. First off, Snapcaster Mage is a lot better in a world with Brainstorm and Swords. And furthermore, Stoneforge Mystic is a lot better in a format with Brainstorm. One of the worst things that could happen is your opening hand has like either one or even worse, 2 pieces of equipment, and then Stoneforge Mystic becomes the worst card in your deck without the Brainstorm to shuffle them back in. Likewise, True Name is an important piece of the deck because it's basically the best equipment carrier that the game has ever seen, basically. Nothing will stop your Jit from getting counters besides an Abrupt Decay. But that said, I think that the Stoneblade blue-white shell is, first off, seems to be one of the more common one people are initially gravitating towards. The Maverick one is interesting if that's going to port cleanly. Maverick has really not been... There just haven't been that many good Selesnya decks besides Devoted Druid combo, whereas blue-white has been a staple of Modern in the control form, and every so often people will wind up doing well with the tempo mid-range version.
So just a couple follow-up questions here. Like you're saying, is Stoneforge Mystic is a bad draw when you've drawn all your equipment, and it's a lot harder to shuffle it back in Modern without Brainstorm. So do you think that maybe the best shells will need to have a little bit more robust equipment package? I think in Legacy, you typically are just playing two, right? You're playing one Batterskull and one Jit. Is that correct?
Yeah, and then every so often people will run sort of Fire and Ice, either main deck as a third piece of equipment or in the sideboard. Although I'm not a huge fan of that, to be honest.
So do you feel like maybe in Modern, you need to play three equipment main deck to make sure that your first Stoneforge or second Stoneforge at least is actually accruing some value?
Okay, so the thing is, at least in Legacy, the way I view... like a two-color deck like Stoneblade, is that you have the blue cards and you have the white cards. And there are some matchups where you want to draw all the white cards and some matchups where you want to draw all the blue cards. And then there's matchups where you want to draw kind of a mix of both. The equipment pieces become more like the white cards. As a result, like they're only good in some matchups. If you're up against Tron, you want to be drawing your counter spells, not your like sort of Fire and Ice. It just doesn't do enough in that matchup. And so... having even more equipment just leads you to having perhaps even a higher chance of having like a clunky draw. Like these equipment, they're not played in Legacy or in Modern at all without Stoneforge Mystic. Nobody plays value sort of Fire and Ice. It just isn't that good of a card on its own. And so playing more of them is interesting because it makes it even more likely you'll have them on its own where it's not good.
So how much of a difference does the Jit make?
Jit is an insane magic card. It says if you're playing a game that involves creatures, you will win it if they can't stop it. That said, Legacy is a little bit leaner and meaner with the Delvers and things like that than Modern is. Jit is definitely one of the best equipments ever printed. It will single-handedly win a creature matchup as long as they aren't playing like Emrakul or Gristlebrand. Even given time, it actually will still beat a Gristlebrand somehow, which is kind of nutty. Yes, sort of Fire and Ice, on the contrary, is not quite there. I mean, actually, people sometimes play Jit in like Delver sideboards, even without playing Stoneforge Mystic at all, just because it's such a good creature combat type of card. And the same thing cannot really be said for sort of Fire and Ice. And the other swords just don't see any play in Legacy, really. Every so often, people say sort of Light and Shadow is good in Maverick. So yeah, I still think, though, that with Stoneforge Mystic, sort of Fire and Ice is definitely better. But it's interesting. I mean... it's not a card that people played in Modern without Stoneforge Mystic.
Yeah, I guess I'm just thinking that, you know, the equipment available in Modern do not really allow you to destroy creatures, unless we're talking about Sword of Fire and Ice. So I was just wondering, like, if that drastically changes the outlook for a card like Stoneforge. You can't just play it, get your equipment, and now the game is completely locked out, locking out all creatures.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, you do wind up getting Batterskull most of the time. There are not many matchups in Legacy where I would fetch a Jit first.
Mm.
Batterskull is actually almost always, even if you really do want the Jit, Batterskull is almost always at least a reasonable thing instead of Jit.
So yeah, it seems like kind of the question is how many additional equipment do you want instead of after your first Batterskull? And then which specific swords do you want? I guess those are the questions left to be... solved, right? I mean, that's the question that's sort of posed to us as brewers. It sounds like you're sort of saying Fire and Ice should be the first sword that you consider in a vacuum.
Yeah, I think sort of Fire and Ice has the generically highest power level damage trigger. I think it's not close. I think drawing a card and dealing 2 damage is just much better than what the other swords offer. That said, the other swords do offer good things. They're just not as good as that. That said, in Legacy, it turns out that like because of True Name, the colors you have protection from don't actually matter that much. True Name has protection from any color your opponent wants to play around with. And so as a result, like the getting like good color coverage is just not even like a thing you think about at all. Whereas in modern, you don't have this kind of card unless you really are a big believer in Hex Drinker. And so actually, yeah, having the ability to find the right coverage of colors for whatever build your opponent's on may actually be quite relevant. And this is something that I'm just not sure about.
Yeah, so maybe, you know, a card like Sword of Light and Shadow, the vast majority we're expecting of removal to be in the format is likely white and some black. And so even though maybe the triggered ability is weaker, you're much more likely to not be blocked. Because it is worth noting to people, the germ token that's made by the living equipment is an actual black creature. So it would prevent it from being able to block whatever is equipped with Sword of Light and Shadow.
Yep, and it can attack through Elephant Grass, etc., etc. There's a million little ways that comes up. A lot of these Stoneforge lists that I've seen, you know, if you have four Snapcaster Mage, four Stoneforge Mystic, and then like maybe two Vendilion Click, there's like a pretty good chance you don't actually have any evasion. And so as a result, the protection modes on the swords are a lot more relevant.
And so just a quick refresher. So the red-blue sword shocks any target and draws a card. The black-white card casts Raise Dead and you gain three life. And then the black-green card, that's the card that people might be familiar with, which was very powerful in Standard in the Callblade days, causes the opponent to discard a card and you get to untap all your lands, which is maybe relevant in decks that are, you know, trying to use flash or counter spells, etc.
Yeah, Sword of Feast and Famine is the best kind of early game tempo sword. It can kind of suck in a relatively stalled out mid game situation if they're already on no cards in hand and you don't have any cards in hand either. It actually just doesn't do anything. Those situations are more rare than the situations where it's good, but it does have a lower floor by far.
And then I'm not sure that any of the other swords are really a consideration.
You don't like War and Peace? Red, white?
I just think it's so much weaker than the other ones that I'm not particularly interested in it, but I guess that's the other one that you could consider, right? I don't think the other ones are even.
So one that was cast against me yesterday was Sinew and Steel. And at the time that the opponent cast it, I had a artifact and a planeswalker in play. I was like, oh no. But I killed him anyway. That was potentially going to be very awkward for me. That one, it could be like a sleeper sword.
Yeah, the Modern Horizons swords are so new that like nobody really knows how good they are in Modern. Nobody's really played with the, I don't even remember the name of the white-blue one, Sword of Proliferate, and I don't remember what it does anymore.
It puts a +1/+1 counter on one of your creatures and then proliferates.
Yeah, it was a Beast and Limited, but is that good and constructed? Like, TBD.
That's Truth and Justice, by the way.
Truth and Justice. Proliferate is certainly powerful with Planeswalkers, but is it good enough?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at, like, effects and how much mana they're worth, we know that shocking something is worth a mana. We know that drawing a card is often worth the mana. Putting a +1/+1 counter on something is not often worth a mana. But proliferating can be, is typically costed as a 2-mana effect. So, worth thinking about.
Pro blue and pro white are somewhat attractive. I guess not that attractive. I don't know.
I mean, I think pro white is an important ability, but I don't think that pro green is all that relevant.
Pro blue. It's good against like Jace Bounce or Snapcaster Block.
Sure.
So beyond the swords, are there any other equipment that we should be having on our radar?
Shuko is an all-star for Cephalid Breakfast. Key role player there. But I don't think Cephalid Breakfast is a deck that exists in Modern. No, maybe not.
How about Manriki Gusari?
That is a good Stoneforge Mirror Breaker. You will see that in sideboards of Legacy decks every so often if D&T is super popular.
I think it's also worth noting that Sword of the Meek is an equipment, so Stoneforge Mystic can find that in a deck that wants to play the Sword of the Meek Thopter Foundry. It's a little less efficient than the Goblin Engineer that's in the current list because it puts it into your hand instead of into the graveyard. But as we mentioned earlier, it does allow you to sort of play a generically fair game if they're doing something that's very disruptive to your combo, because you can still always just Stoneforge Mystic for a Batterskull and that isn't as concerned about an oof or whatever.
Yeah, on the other hand, Goblin Engineer will also entomb your Thopter Foundry and then get it back if you already have the sword in hand. And it can also start looping Spell Bombs and Ichor Wellsprings to draw lots of cards. And so to some extent, I feel like Goblin Engineer like really clicks in that deck, and cutting it for Stoneforge seems a little bit strange to me. Also, you can like occasionally get a Batterskull. That said, I'm not sure on that. Time will tell.
I mean, you could certainly play both. Stoneforge Mystic is one of the colors that you'd want to play anyway with Thopter Foundry, so that might be a reason that why people would lean that way. But they're already playing Arkham's Astrolabe and Mox Opal, so maybe mana isn't. The colors aren't really a concern.
That deck is low on slots to squeeze in both the Engineers and the Stoneforges and the Batterskull.
Yeah.
Shifting gears then slightly, you talked about Maverick only playing two copies of Stoneforge, and I would like to know why that is possible. I thought this was a four of card or bust.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure on the theory. This is one of those things where I first started playing Legacy Maverick by copying somebody's deck list. And every Maverick list I've ever seen plays, you know, one Sylvan Library and two Stoneforge Mystic. And I never really questioned those numbers. I just took them and I was like, yeah, actually, they play out pretty well. What's interesting is that Maverick does not even play Batterskull at all. It plays usually Sophie and Chit. What's interesting about Maverick is that it doesn't really need the kind of mana advantage that Stoneforge Mystic can provide with Batterskull, because it already is capable of generating a fair amount of mana from the Knight of Reliquaries and Noble Hierarchs. And so Stoneforge Mystic is just sort of a good kind of solo threat to help you tutor for whichever equipment is a little bit better. But it's not like a critical player in the deck's main axes of victory. Basically what I'm saying is that the deck is a deck that would actually maybe play equipment without Stoneforge Mystic at all, just because it plays a bunch of creatures and the equipment are good with them, to diversify the kind of angles of attacks the deck has. And then it may as well play a couple Stoneforge Mystic because it's just a good card. But it's like on turn two, that deck wants to play Thalia. And on turn three, it wants to play Knight of the Reliquary.
So is that something that we should be on the lookout for in Modern 2? Not just thinking like, okay, which decks want to get a Batterskull early and maybe a Sword of Fire and Ice later, but like which decks might just enjoy having some equipment to buff up their attackers?
Yeah. Yeah, certainly this is maybe one of the things where like the Spirits deck doesn't really need a Batterskull exactly. Like Batterskull is fine, but it's too expensive to equip your flyers, and then if you have a bunch of flyers and a Batterskull, they can just trump the Batterskull until they do whatever nefarious thing your opponent's doing. And so you'd rather just have a few pieces of equipment that can help you get whatever effect you need. Maybe Blue White Spirits wants to actually play Sword of Sinew and Steel as a random out to walkers and artifacts, and maybe it wants to play Sort of Fire Knights because it's good, and then maybe even a third one, maybe not. And then you just play like a couple Stoneforge.
Interesting.
Another pattern that I've seen with Stoneforge Mystic, and this I think actually kind of predates when I got into Legacy, is before a lot of like the good control finishers got printed, I think people would run this package where they have two Stoneforge Mystic, one Batterskull, and that's the whole package. And this just gives you a control deck, a good late-game win con that's super slot efficient.
So it doesn't have to be a four of. This is encouraging for me. I have not seen anyone proposing a list like that yet, but maybe that's an option to be aware of.
Yeah, if I was looking into blue-white, this is one of the things I would consider, where you basically say that the Batterskull is meant to be the card kind of like Celestial Colonnade. It's like a little bit clunky in the early game. Sometimes it's amazing off the Stoneforge Mystic, but it's meant to be a card that on turn 10, when you have, you know, 9 lands in play, you can just tap out and play it with like Cryptic Command up, and then it'll take over the game from there. If they kill the Germ, you're like, okay, EOT, bounce the Batterskull, next turn you replay it, and use it like the full mana-heavy Batterskull investment to just grind value.
Okay, well, on that note, should we talk about some lists?
Yeah.
I think the ways to use this card, you either need to sort of slot it into a mid-range deck that was already trying to attack with creatures, and now you're just adding, like Damon's describing, a pretty thin package into it. Or you can add it as a sort of thin, quote-unquote, fair plan B to a deck that has a combo finish. So we were talking about Urza earlier. I think we've already seen a couple 5-0s with people. So they still play the sort of the meek Thopter Foundry combo, but they also have four Stoneforge Mystic and one or two Batterskull, so that they're very resistant to cards like the Oof, like Stony Silence. They can just beat you down with their 4-4 that's a little under-costed. And the life gain also gives them a long time to sort of draw out of whatever disruption you might have for their plan A. I think there's a list. Samuel Grabner on Twitter has already posted a 5-0. Or no, he said he hasn't 5-0'd yet, but he's gone 16-4. So he's put up four consecutive 4-1s, which is quite an impressive feat.
So we had talked about last week that the Urza list is not settled. You know you need blue, and then you need something else, some other combination of colors, potentially all the colors. So just saying that, like, yeah, we want to put the Stoneforge into an Urza deck doesn't actually narrow it down as far as one might think, because there's so many Urza variants, and just looking at the list that other Magic pros and personalities have been proposing, like, some are blue-white Urza. Now that we have Stoneforge, we can really tighten up the deck and just focus on the good blue-white stuff. And some are saying, you know, this is just another tool. I'm going to keep dabbling in all these other colors to have the best available stuff, like the Engineer or Black Disruption or whatever it is. Whatever Urza might fancy for his little toolbox.
Yeah, and I think two other decks that are already playing white and already can get some value out of sort of coming to play triggers. Devoted Druid lists, you can slot in your six-card package into there. Or we've seen some proposed lists with Saheeli that also I think can make really good use of Stoneforge Mystic. And to your point earlier, Dan, I've seen a bunch of proposed lists that only are proposing three Stoneforge Mystics there, and they're playing only two equipment. So they're not that concerned with getting value from each individual one as you get into the late game, but it is, first of all, even just being able to block for their multiple Planeswalkers that list plays, that seems very, very intriguing to me going forward.
So you describe them as combo decks that can also make use of a Stoneforge package. Why is Stoneforge useful for this style of deck?
Well, a lot of times what you have to do against combo decks in Modern is sort of sell out. You have to abandon some of your specific or your generic disruption to use specific disruption to stop whatever they're doing. So when you're focused on doing that, Stoneforge Mystic is just a very generically powerful card. It's a straight up 2-for-1. The extra card that it generates, if you allow them to untap with Stoneforge Mystic, is this 4-4 lifelinking card. So that's just a generically powerful card, as you said, against aggressive decks, against decks that are trying to use lots of creatures to attack. And it also puts pressure on other control style decks. They're forced to react because you're able to proactively play out this 4-4 at instant speed.
Is the function of the Batterskull then to just like buy time, or are you actually envisioning that in some amount of games you'll just win with that after they've exhausted themselves trying to stop your, let's say, your Saheeli Cat combo or something?
I'm thinking of it more as something you can proactively play out on turn two that is a lot more powerful than, you know, they were playing Icefang Quaddle or whatever. I mean, sure, that's a nice value card that you can, you know, wring some more value out of with Saheeli Rai. But it's not a card that actually wins the game, right? They can take a lot of attacks from the Flying Snake there before they even have to respond. That's not the case with a 4-4 lifelink. That takes a big chunk out of your life in a very short order.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, so like, I think that the way it slots into Saheeli versus Devoted Druid are pretty different. Saheeli combo is basically built like a kind of control deck. If there's like a bunch of walkers and then some nominal number of creature kill spells and then some sort of counter suite, whether it be Remands versus Cryptics versus Logic Knots, etc. And so in this case, Stoneforge Mystic is just a good card because it can come down early and then help stop like burn type decks or whatever will have trouble with an early Batterskull, while also being a relatively clean, small package to add to the deck to give it a different access to win in the longer games that can grind pretty well. Devoted Druid is different because that deck already features a ton of creatures to put equipment onto. And that deck really wants to be going for its plan A, like on turn 1 and 2. Whereas Saheeli like takes longer to set up. It's like a turn 3, turn 4 combo versus a turn 2, turn 3 combo.
I don't think that Saheeli Rai plays a lot of counter spells in my experience. I'm thinking of it more as the kind of a tap out deck that has a lot of value creatures for Saheeli Rai to copy.
If you're thinking of like a year ago, the Saheeli Rai deck would have stuff like Lotus Cobra and like a weird creature package going all the way up to Kiki Jiki or something. But I'm thinking more the more recent vintage of Jeskai Saheeli decks that we were talking about with Watcher for Tomorrow, where apart from the Planeswalkers and the Felidar Guardian, you just want miscellaneous stuff in Jeskai colors. Force of Negation actually ends up being a really good card in that deck. There's a guy that I keep running into him at my local shop. He always seems to get me with his Jeskai deck, and he's gone up to 4 Force of Negation's main deck, and has really made me appreciate that card. It's very difficult to punch through when they have these sturdy tempo and value engines in the form of Planeswalkers your big counterplay might just be negated by a zero mana counterspell. The brief window you have to get ahead. Which is to say, like, there is a school of thought that the best home for a Saheeli is something more like the Splinter Twin decks of old. That is just a tempo-y deck with some removal, some counterspells. Now, the list that Ben Freeman is proposing now is an update on what he calls Snowheely. Why not play Arkham's Astrolabe? The card is potentially broken, and he's got Ren and Six in there and Icefang Coetle, so it is like more of a mishmash of creatures. He suggested putting Stoneforge into that, because then these Icefangs that, like you're saying, will never kill the opponent in time could actually pick up a sword now and maybe win that way.
Yeah, the Snowheely Blade deck looks... This makes sense to me, certainly. I'm curious about... The release originally saw a feature, I think it was running more Narsets, and now it's just running Ren and Six.
Correct.
Maybe Ren and Six is just a better card. That certainly seems possible. This deck is basically running the Niv-Mizzet mana base, which is cool.
So yeah, and I think Narsets became like Seasoned Pyromancers, which just put some creatures on the board, and that used to just be a tactic to buy time, but now with Stoneforge in the picture, like those creatures, you might end up having to trade a lot of resources for them as the game goes on.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting is that basically, like, Jit with tokens, they can have a Tarmogoyf, but the Jit will get your tokens through the Tarmogoyf eventually, whereas, like, a Sophie will just not get through the Tarmogoyf ever. This deck plays four paths for that occurrence, of course, but...
So, I mean, this is an interesting home. I found a tweet from John Huang on Twitter that he had scored a 5-0 already with a Jeskai Saheeli deck that put a full playset of Seasoned Pyromancer into the deck just to sort of have stuff, have tokens sitting around, and then added some Stoneforges and Light Batterskull and Sword of Fire, a nice package. Yeah, I guess that works.
And it goes without saying, if you can copy Seasoned Pyromancer with Saheeli Rai with no cards in hand, that is just awesome.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that. Or Blink It.
Yeah.
So a good find there. I like this deck quite a lot. So we're going to be bouncing through different archetypes and check the show notes. There's going to be a massive Stoneforge compendium in the show notes of different lists.
Dan has taken it up himself to be the chronicler of all Stoneforge action in Modern for the foreseeable future.
I want to document the demise of Modern.
Chapter 1, the first week.
So I think those are kind of the three, I don't want to say obvious, but the three most likely sort of combo shells you can kind of slot in this relatively slim Stoneforge package into. And then I think the next option is a control deck. So sort of what Damon was describing, you can just use it in sort of what we would call a fairway. I think the obvious things people are thinking of are sort of a port from the old Clawblade days into Modern. So you can play four Stoneforge Mystic plus the two equipment in basically like blue-white control with maybe a few extra cards added because you want a few more creatures running around. At least some amount of Snapcaster Mage. I've seen lists that propose, you know, some amount of Spellquell or some amount of V-Click. You throw in Jace the Mind Sculptor, which really enjoys the shuffle effect that Stoneforge Mystic adds. Yeah, I think that deck is going to be very powerful just generically. You don't have to do anything special. There's no extra brewing that really needs to happen.
So is this like the direct port of the Legacy deck?
I think that there kind of is no direct port. The way I view these blue-white decks is basically going one of three possible ways. The first is you just take your stock blue-white control deck and you basically just like replace, I don't know, maybe like the two main deck surgicals it was running. And you put in, find room for basically two Stoneforges and a Batterskull and just say that we now have a new control finisher and maybe you can like replace a Colonnade to make the deck a little bit cleaner on the mana. This is not what I've seen anybody proposing at all. What I'm seeing are the other directions, one of which is basically a heavier modification to the blue-white control, but still fundamentally true to the classic blue-white with like cryptics and a bunch of planeswalkers. You just add six-card package with four Stoneforges and two equipments, and then you probably add like some Vendilion Clicks to make the equipment a little bit better. Not that Vendilion Click is like a bad card, it just was not like a top Modern card recently.
You're talking to Dave here. Are you sure you want to go on record as saying Vendilion Click is not a top Modern card?
Vendilion Click is a meta card. I think there's metas where it's absolutely amazing, and then there's metas where it just is, like, not a good card.
It certainly is not a good card in the Hogak world. It doesn't block anything successfully, and it can never race.
Yeah, and its ETB trigger doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
How quickly you turn on your friends, Dave. You love this card.
I love Vendilion Click. I'm excited that maybe it's going to be playable again.
So in terms of complementary creatures, I've seen like a motley crew of creatures in the blue, white, or Jeskai colors bandied about. Mantis Rider is the way to go. I've seen Spell Quellers, Clicks, Geist of St. Treft, Lingering Souls. A lot of people are thinking along the lines of, like you're saying, Damon, we need something else to sort of have more bodies in play. And it's just sort of pick the one that you think is going to be well positioned.
I do think privileging cards with flash is really important. Spellqueller and V-Click are totally different sort of ways to think about this as opposed to something like Lingering Souls, which is still, even in this hopefully slower modern world, going to be a very clunky card.
Yeah, I mean, like the Spellqueller Vendilion Click list is basically much more akin to the blue-white tempo decks that every so often will like get top 100 at GP, and then it's like a deck people like to play because it's fun. And this might make the deck actually much, much better and make it actually be a comparably good white-blue deck than the control version. And this deck feels a little bit more true to the Legacy Stoneblade roots, where it just features more creatures that are evasive and a little bit less of the control, like pure control roll cards.
You're talking about the blue-white list proposed by Emma Handy?
Yeah, yeah. And Teferi Time Raveler is a good card to go with Spellqueller. That's like a natural synergy. So yeah, so that list actually, I like the look of that one. And then there's like the Jeskai list people are talking about featuring Mantis Rider. Those are no longer control decks, really. Those have gone much more into aggro decks. And they certainly do seem quite powerful. I have never played against a Mantis Rider holding a Sword of Fire and Ice, but that sounds scary.
Since he's got the Mantis flying him around, the Rider is free to wield the sword.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the scariest card to hold equipment is a Mirran Crusader. Nothing else is close to that.
The sort of blue-white midrange harkens back to... So there was an extended period before Modern was created where there was what they called at the time like a blue-white fairies list that played like Spellstutter Sprite, V-Click, and it had the Stoneforge Mystic package attached to it. And that was quite, quite dominant in its time. So there's at least some historical basis to think that, you know, sort of flash creatures plus the Stoneforge package plus the sort of standard blue-white disruption interaction suite has had success, obviously in a slightly different card pool, slightly different sort of format, but that is something that I think that's why people are kind of leaning towards those types of card selections.
So if I had to make you play one of these lists right now, which one do you think is the closest to what you think might be successful of these blue-white X fair shells?
I would be curious to actually try the control version with one of the two Stoneforge and one Batterskull list.
Oh, deck of your own design, because no one has proposed that yet.
Exactly, yeah. I think actually the blue-white control is sneakily... It always puts up these bad win rates, but I think the looting ban and the Hogak ban really shake things up a lot, and it seems like the deck is just better than it's ever been in terms of the cards it gets to play.
I buy that. It feels that way when I play against it.
Yeah, and so then trying to like completely jam in like, a bunch of cards that are not that controlling seems a little bit wrong to me. It seems like the deck might be best with a slight... Treating Stoneforge as like a slight upgrade, not a major overhaul.
If you were playing against a deck like that, how much removal would you want in your 60 that you present in games 2 and 3?
Yeah, that's one of the tricky things about this deck is that if you bring in a bunch of cards against Batterskull, they might not even have Batterskull online until turn 10 where they have way more than enough mana to bounce it. But you might need it early because it could be you're trying to pressure them and they have a turn 2 Stoneforge Mystic. And so I think that's one of the advantages of this package that it's harder to sideboard against than the kind of more all-in on the Stoneforge plan.
I do love the juke, too, where you're playing Stoneforge, they want to, you know, play Bolts or Fatal Pushes or whatever, but then after board, you can bring in Geist. So the typical way that people can handle Geist, right, is you just play a better creature. You play a 3-mana 3-3, and Geist can never attack. But 3-mana 3-3s are terrible against the Stoneforge half. So you really kind of put them, you know, in a damned if they do, damned if they don't, because Batterskull is good against all these fair creatures, but Geist is good against all the removal that you want to prevent them from getting Batterskull into play.
Yeah, Geist is somewhat analogous to True Name. They're definitely not the same card, but it does let you safely suit up your equipment.
Blue-White is no longer dead to Thrawn the Last Troll. That's a little unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think almost card for card, I would play Ben Friedman's proposed list. I had jotted down a list that was like maybe off by one card. So I like the idea of playing 3-4 Negation. I need to try to get that number up to 4, but 3 Jace, 2 Teferi, that just seems right to me. And 10 creatures, don't need anything else besides Snapcaster, Mage, V-Click, and Stoneforge. I don't think you need to sneak anything else in there.
Yeah, and one thing, I guess, as long as we're talking about this, is that the 2 Stoneforge, 1 Batterskull package is also super strong as a transformational sideboard. It's like a 3-card package that gives you a whole different axis of victory. I'm not sure which deck can really take advantage of that very effectively, but it's something to keep an eye out for. It's just like a deck-building pattern.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So, Stoneforge doesn't say that you have to pair it with blue. And we've seen some lists proposed along these lines, so black-white is an interesting option. What's sometimes called black-white sewer, I guess that's the name that Gabriel Nassif uses. Some people call it dead guy.
Dead guy ale is the term way back in the day when people were, you know, dark ritualing out Hypnotic Spectre.
Caleb Durward had already posted a 5-0 result with a black-white build that was more creature-focused. The Stoneforge package was in the 2-slot, but the 2-slot also had Dark Confidants and Tidehollow Scholars, a playset of each. And then on 3-mana, Liliana of the Veil and Lingering Souls, even a Liliana the Last Hope. Basically deploying permanents from turn 2 and 3 onward, and then your 1-slot is discard spells and removal. Inquisition, Thoughtseize, Path Push, that kind of stuff. What do you guys think of this take? The hypothesis here is that you could always build this black-white mid-rangey control deck, but it wasn't really powerful enough. Maybe it wasn't quite good enough at grinding or didn't have enough options. Do you think Stoneforge changes the math on that? The ability to just have a little more card advantage and pivot to the appropriate sword to make your sad little 2/1s and 2/2s actually legitimate threats?
Yeah, I think this deck is really well positioned. I think it's actually going to be really good in the mirror because you A, get to play your hand disruption spell on turn 1. So if you're on the draw, you can still take their Stoneforge Mystic before they play it. And if you're on the play, you can take their removal spell for your Stoneforge Mystic before you play it. And then in addition to that, you get to play additional 2-drops. In the Callblade days, they played 4 Stoneforge Mystic and 4 Squadron Hawk, and you were supposed to mulligan hands that didn't have either of those. You get to play Dark Confidant, which is sort of the black 2-mana power creature, and your Stoneforge Mystic. On top of that, you even get to play Tidehollow Scholar, which is another disruptive element, and if you're on the play again, you can get that down before Stoneforge Mystic is in play. I don't really like the Lingering Souls Liliana package all that much, but I think the base of what he's doing here, which is kind of built off of Nassif's old sort of black-white sewer list, is very powerful. And getting to play Fatal Push as a removal spell that doesn't ramp your opponent instead of Path, which blue-white has to basically play 4 Path, and it gives you outs against, like we were talking about, mana creatures, etc. Fatal Pushing a Bird of Paradise is way different than pathing one.
Yeah, this deck is interesting to me. I kind of have like an innate skepticism of any black-white list, just because I haven't seen these types of decks be good in any format. Possibly, I don't want to say ever, but I certainly haven't really been around for too many times these decks have been good. It kind of just looks like it's playing a lot of Jund cards, but without a lot of the... It's like an imbalanced Jund, I guess. But you get Stoneforge Mystic is like the key thing.
What makes Jund Jund? It used to be that it was the discard package, the Thoughtseize Inquisition, the Confidant, and the Liliana of the Veil. You had these other colors, green and red, just because you needed to fill out the deck with something. Black couldn't really kill them that easily, and Tarmogoyf was the best tool for that. And then, depending on how you feel about a card like Bloodbraid Elf or Lightning Bolt or something, you'd have some incentives to be playing red or whatever, or just like straight black-green. But that was never really the power of the deck. The black cards are what puts the entire archetype in position to succeed, and then you have some complementary color providing like the actual finishing punch. So there wasn't like a ton of stuff in white before. Maybe it's just like Stoneforge gives you the option to find everything you need in just these 2 colors.
Yeah.
If you like Lingering Souls and Tidehollow Scholar. If you hate them, then you won't want to play this deck.
I think you can play this shell without Lingering Souls, though. I don't think Lingering Souls is a key card at all. 12 powerful 2-drops, and then you can build other cards in there. You don't have to play that at all.
How do you feel about this list from John Hamilton? This is XJ Cloud on Twitter, who has also posted a 5-0 list in the first day or two that is black-white, and it replaces all those cards you said you didn't like with an Eldrazi package. Eldrazi Displacer, Wasteland Strangler on 3, and then going up the chain to Thought Not Seer and Reality Smasher.
Wasteland Strangler is just such a cute magic card. I've never really seen it play out too much. Just to clarify, the interaction here is that if you have like a Tidehauler Sculler, you exile their card, and then Wasteland Strangler lets you put it into their graveyard, kill a creature, and they never get the card back if Tidehauler Sculler died.
That's correct. And his deck is playing the full four Path to Exile to try to make sure he's got Wasteland Strangler food and two Relic of Progenitus, even though I'm sure he's not that concerned about graveyard interaction, and four Thoughtknots here. I'm not sure on every card selection here, but I really like what this deck is doing. I would probably try to replace some of these Eldrazi Displacers with something that's a little cheaper, maybe a couple more two drops. But I really like the idea of Reality Smasher since it has Trample. So they can't just chump to prevent you from getting your Sword of Light and Shadow or Sword of Fire and Ice triggers. And Reality Smasher also punishes them if they try to like kill it in response to equip, you know, which is often a tempo positive play. You at least get two cards out of them. Eldrazi Temple, we know, is a possibly broken land. And then you're also getting it with to sort of add it to your base plan of getting to play your Stoneforge Mystic, which is also very powerful in fair matchups. And it should be noted, Prismatic Vista makes the mana base of a deck like this so much more powerful now because it can also fetch waste. It's literally a tri-fetch land.
In this list, Displacer can be a 2-drop if you have a Temple. So I would not want to go down on Displacers. I think it's one of the most important cards if you're playing a black-white Eldrazi package. It also happens to be a Mirror Breaker against Stoneforge Mystic. I like it a lot here. If you are familiar with what is called black-white Eldrazi Taxes, this has a lot of the same cards, but remove the Aether Vials, remove the Flicker Wisps, and taken away the Cat Jesus that we didn't like. That whole angle of maybe I'll get them with a Ghost Quarter and a Leonin Arbiter has been axed to make room for the Stoneforge package. And actually, Thalia is gone too. That's a bit more of a gambit. I'm kind of surprised that Thalia is not here. Taking the Eldrazi part of the Eldrazi Taxes and saying that's the power of the deck and maybe doubling down on that.
Yeah, I like a lot of what this deck is doing. I'm sure that the numbers of some of these cards will get moved around, but this is a very, very clever initial run, and I'm glad that he was able to get a 5-0.
So should we move on to Bant?
Let's do it.
Sure.
So the concept here is that you're basically playing a bunch of miscellaneous creatures in Bant colors with Collected Company on top. So think of cards like Icefang Quetzal, Giver of Ruins, and then at the 3 slot maybe something like Spell Quellers or Ranger Captains, whatever you think you might want. Those decks were always sort of, we have a hate-love-hate relationship with them, because we always keep finding ourselves like attracted to these sort of miscellaneous value creatures in Bant colors. But now, if you can add Stoneforge in, maybe these creatures start to get a little more attractive. We've already seen two different 5-0 results with this basic concept. One is from Aspiring Spike, and another from Saffron Olive. Different cards in each spot on the curve, so like Saffron Olive's deck has a full set of Force Negations, and it goes as high as Restoration Angels, has some Cryptic Commands. It almost seems like the creatures and spells you're putting around it don't really matter that much, but I guess the idea is that in a vacuum, we like the idea of a card like Icefang Quetzal or Spell Queller. They just weren't quite good enough to actually win a match before. It seems like if you add Stoneforges, you now have enough power and resilience to like get there.
Yeah, I really like Saffron Olive's build quite a bit more than Aspiring Spike. I am not liking Collected Company, as per usual. I just don't think you actually get that much out of it in the build that they have. Getting to play Cryptic Command and Force Negation is a huge plus, especially because we think that Tron is going to be a big player. I'm not sure 100% on every card choice that's in Saffron Olive's list, but I think it's headed in the right direction.
I think I agree with that. I mean, this deck with the Collected Companies is interesting. It's just that the cards that you'll want to hit are kind of situational.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the value Coco, I mean, I guess if you got, like, an Icefang Quetzal plus a Stoneforge Mystic, like, that's pretty good.
What's not to like? So much value.
It is a lot of value.
I hear what you're saying, though. What's changed that makes that suddenly a worthwhile thing to do in Modern?
Well, the Stoneforge Mystic, I guess.
It could be that, or it could just be that like a lot of the format Predators are gone. I would not want to be doing that against a Thing of the Ice Phoenix deck, for example.
Right.
Or, God forbid, against Dredge or something like that. these were the decks that always used to be like, well, I'm going to lose game one a lot of the time, and I hope that my sideboard pulls me through so that my value stuff matters. Maybe the equation has just changed. Maybe the modern format is now more receptive to this style of deck that plays to the battlefield like Wizards has said they want us to do, and is creature combat focused and card advantage focused.
Yeah, the Soulforge Mystic decks really do hit what Wizards is going for with modern. Whether they're doing it at the expense of everything else they were going for is a different question.
I need to mention also that there have actually already been two 5-0 lists that I found on Twitter. Another one is from Aspiring Spike, and a second very similar list from K-Ponce. These are mono-white, I guess you call them aggro decks, with a full set of Stoneforges, a full set of Squadron Hawks, and Force of Virtue, our favorite from, I don't know what that was, episode 8 or something? Both these lists were playing 4 copies of Force of Virtue. How do you guys feel about that?
The Force of Virtue Squadron Hawk decks we were trying, I forget which week it was, that deck always felt like it was close to being pretty good. And Stoneforge Mystic really might put that over the top. And then furthermore, Flicker Wisp is actually both really good with and against Stoneforge Mystic, whether it comes to resetting your Batterskull, flickering your Stoneforge to get a different piece of equipment, or flickering their Germ, or their Dude to unequip it. Flicker Wisp just has a lot of targets in a Stoneforge Mystic-rich environment. So this deck actually seems like an interesting thing to be trying these days.
I do recall that when we were dealing with these white cards, you know, we did a week on Force of Virtue, we did a week on Ranger Captain, and we did a week on Brought Back. We consistently found that the 2-drop was just always a problem.
Yeah.
Never anything good for 2 mana. Thalia was theoretically great, but many of our builds were hurt by Thalia. And, you know, we hated Lead and Arbiter, and there just wasn't anything else. We had to sort of really convince ourselves that Squadron Hawk was worth doing. I believe it more if it can pick up a sword.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is interesting, though, you know, so this is not a Death and Taxes shell. There is no Lean and Arbiter, and a lot of these decks that we're looking at seem like they give a lot of game away to Tron. It's really hard for this deck to interact with Tron in any way. Even after sideboard, neither of these lists really has a lot of cards that I'm particularly excited to bring in against Tron, so... I think Tron is going to have a really good weekend, is I guess what I'm saying. As much as we want it to be all the fun new builds.
Yeah, that is... I think that's always going to be a problem for white. You can put some Damping Spheres in. The mana base does allow you to play things like Field of Ruin and Ghost Quarter to buy a little time. If you want to try to get lucky with a Surgical Extraction in conjunction with those cards, you could do that. But I don't know. That's not an easy problem to solve. I think, Damon, your initial instinct that Tron will be feasting on this style of deck is likely to be true.
The mono white version, actually, going back to Martyr proc, that deck has room to play a gajillion Ghost Quarters and Field of Ruins, and these lists don't do that, but they probably could. The list from Aspiring Spike has 2 field 4 Mutavault, and then everything else taps for white. I imagine you could get a couple more field effects in there, and then you have a couple Damping Spheres and Sonia's on the sideboard. Giver of Runes is not good against Ostum, but it is good against Wurmcoil and Karn. It's not clear to me that Tron is like a terrible matchup here.
Fair. Yeah, you could maybe devote more of your slots to cards that directly interact with Tron. You don't have to play all those Mutavolts. So, yeah, Hawk is back. Cobblade is back.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So we've been going for a while now. We've covered about half of what I've seen out there proposed for Stoneblade, but I think we should just call it here. How can we summarize the trends we're seeing? We're 48 hours into the Stoneforge Mystic metagame.
Well, so it's the last Stoneforge Mystic. That's the quickest summary.
Basically, everyone who can possibly fit this in is trying it. Reed Duke loves Abzan, so he was streaming that today with Stoneforge. Ryan Overturf had posted like a green-white Eldrazi incorporated to Stoneforge. Wyatt Darby had like a zoo list that was Naya colors that he liked.
Shades of the famous boss Naya that LSV went 16-0 with back in the day.
Oh, was that the deck he used for that? I didn't realize that.
Yeah. That's why it was so similar to the one that I proposed, because I'm sure he took that as a starting point.
My goodness. Yeah, so I mean, there's all kinds of stuff where people are just like, oh, let's just get the Stoneforge in there and see what happens. There's even like the wild Colossus Hammer combo deck. Who knows? I'm not willing to say that deck is a real thing, but Caleb Durbert was streaming it. He did go 3-1 with it, so may not be that far out of the question. We're going to be hearing a lot from Stoneforge. I've already counted 7 or 8 different lists that people have just on Twitter have said, I already 5-0 with this. So what's your over-under on the number of Stoneforge decks that are going to show up in the first deck dump?
Oh, I'm sure they'll hack their deduping logic to only let one Stoneforge Mystic deck in at a time. So, one.
Yeah, I mean, it remains to be seen how they're going to try to control the narrative on this. Obviously, you can argue that these are all different decks, right? Even though they're fundamentally, their primary plan is to cast Stoneforge Mystic and put a quick Batterskull into play. Or you could argue that Stoneforge Mystic allows you to play all these varying shells and raises their power level up to sort of acceptable game one chance in a powerful and varied format like Modern. So I guess it's sort of a glass half empty, glass half full, and we'll have to see. Does this variety stick around, or do people kind of settle on a couple lists, which is something we've unfortunately see all the time, and people kind of lose that spark of wanting to try stuff?
Well, I'll answer my own question as 18. That's my over-under.
I'm going to say 12. I think 18 is crazy high.
18 seems high.
Well, I mean, I've already shown you 7 different ones.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Those are just the people who use Twitter.
Aren't some of those already within the duplication threshold, though?
No, I don't think any of them are. They're all different. So 18, and I would probably take the over on that, to be honest.
I have the under. I will bet you a cookie.
All right.
I'll give you 15, because I actually think it's too easy.
I like macadamia nuts. I like chocolate chip peanut butter cookies are okay, too.
All right, we'll say 15 and a half. I have the under. Damon is the witness.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, they timed it so there's no major modern tournaments, so the narrative, we're not going to find out what the truth is for a long time about this.
Isn't there a CG event this weekend?
Well, yeah, but like that's opening weekend. You can't really...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's not going to establish a narrative. And then there's a lull in modern. There's going to be a standard rotation, and we'll just be stuck with this metagame for a while, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even have a metagame yet, really. It has to stabilize first.
Okay. I think that is a good preliminary discussion of Stoneforge. Anything that you think you want to play this week?
I definitely want to take one of the blue-white variants for a spin, possibly just the control version. I do wonder about playing the anti-Stoneforge decks, but to focus on testing for this week, probably one of the blue-white lists and maybe one of the white-black lists?
Dave, how about you?
Yeah, probably one of the white-blue sort of mid-range, or if you want to call it a flash list. And then I kind of want to go back to the brought-back list that we were tooling around with 4 or 5 weeks ago, and see if I can slot a Stoneforge Mystic package into that, see how that feels. I think the interaction of Big Teferi untapping 2 mana, which is exactly what you need to activate Stoneforge Mystic, is something I'm kind of curious to see if that has some sort of reasonable synergies. So that's something that I'm going to look at.
That one I think could benefit a ton from Stoneforge because it had that 2-drop problem. If you're not casting Brought Back on turn 2, like, what are you doing? And I never really liked the idea that Secure Tribe Elder or Edge of Autumn were the right way to go. Those are more like, well, we have to ramp, so we might as well put some ramp cards in. But Stoneforge does a nice job of that. Maybe I ramp, maybe I didn't. Stoneforge can, plus some equipments, can make use of however much mana I happen to have while also increasing the power level of the deck.
Also, I mean, I got main deck surgical multiple times, so that hopefully won't be happening anymore. It's a good time to have some soft synergy with the graveyard. I think most of the hate is going to be gone.
True.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, I think that's good. I'll probably be playing some Force of Virtue list just because I liked that card. But we'll report back next week with anything we liked and maybe have something new that we brewed up. This should be an interesting week in the queues, that's for sure.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, take care, boys.
See ya. See you next time.
See ya.
That'll do it for episode 18 of the Faithless Brewing Podcast. You can find all of the decks from today's show in the episode description of your preferred podcast player. If you like what you heard on today's show, we want to hear from you. You can find us on Twitter at FaithlessMTG, email us faithlessbrewing@gmail.com, and please consider leaving us an iTunes review. We depend on brewers like you to help us improve the show and bring you better content. So give us your feedback, tell a friend, and we will see you next week. I'm still pissed about this, man. I'm so pissed.